Welcome to Small Time Leaders, a 10-minute podcast about how giving credit to others can help you experience more success and meaning in your leadership and life. My name is Michael Allen Tate, but my friends call me Mike. I work with accomplished business people who want to design a personal strategy to make their next big move their best move. In each of my podcasts, you will hear a successful leader talk about a couple of people in their lives who did or said a small thing that was so on point and profound that it still impacts how they live and work today, which I've come to call small-time leader moments.
It is my honor today to have as my guest Susan Fowler. Susan is a best-selling author and international consultant who shares her message on optimal motivation, self-leadership, and thriving together around the globe. In her best-selling book, Why Motivating People Doesn't Work and What Does, Susan implores leaders to stop trying to motivate people because it doesn't work and aggravates everyone involved. Thanks to this bestseller that's been translated in over a dozen foreign languages, Susan has helped thousands of managers worldwide learn how to activate their staff's optimal motivation. Her latest book, Mastering Your Motivation, Three Scientific Truths for Achieving Your Goals, Susan helps individuals achieve their goals and flourish as they succeed. Susan lives in San Diego, where she is a senior consulting partner for the Ken Blanchard Companies and a professor in executive leadership program at the University of San Diego. Susan is a board member of the Angel Faces, a nonprofit organization serving adolescent girls with severe burn, trauma, and disfigurement. Welcome today, my guest, Susan Fowler. So, Susan, it is so good to see you again from sunny San Diego, and we're sitting here in Birmingham wishing we had the weather you have out there. But how are you today?
I am very grateful for a lot of things.
So, yeah, one of the things I always have on my podcast, I begin with gratitude or what you're thankful for in your life at this point. Would you share with us something you're especially thankful for right now?
I have to tell you that for many, many years now, every email that I send, I sign it with gratitude. And when I write a check, I sign it with gratitude and then my name. And so gratitude is something that I really try to incorporate into my daily life because studies show that it really makes a difference. And so I think that the thing that I'm finding myself most grateful for this week is that the work that I've chosen to do in my life is especially relevant and helpful during this particular time in history. That the work around motivation and health and well-being and what it takes to thrive is not only helping me, but it's helping my family and the people that I work with. And so I'm really grateful that at my age, that my chosen profession is relevant and helpful.
Yes, it certainly is. And so I'm sure a few people have contributed to your life and where you are now and the things you've learned. And so I'd like for you to share a little something different. I always ask people to share about one small time leader in their life, and you're going to share about three, I think. So tell us about those three people and what they meant to you.
Yeah, I think these three people are symbolic. And so I would love for your listeners to really think about, and I love your concept of the small time leader, because we are faced with these people and opportunities for learning from them every single day. When I think about my philosophy of life, that one of the people that pops into my mind is Mr. Espinosa. I don't even know his first name. He was my algebra teacher in junior high school. And he would ask a question, and then he would call on somebody in the room to answer the question. And I'll just never forget the first time I raised my hand and I answered a question because I loved math. And he looks at me really fiercely and he says, "Are you willing to bet your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness on that answer?" And I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't know. Let me think about that. And so I think what he kickstarted in a large degree was this need to be a critical thinker, to not just throw out an answer or throw out a response, but to be thoughtful about it and to say, what's my proof? You know, my husband to this day, I'll say something and he goes, "Well, that's interesting. What proof do you have of that?" Like, shut up. Yeah. So this whole thing of critical thinking. And then A couple of years later, I am in English class with Mrs. Fox, and her husband happens to be a logic teacher at a university. And she has him come in once a week to teach us, and we're in eighth grade, ninth grade, teach us logic. And I'll just never forget this aha moment, like when he gave that classic example of a dog has four legs. A dog is an animal. So are all animals dogs? And you go, no, that's stupid. And so what he was able to do was to say, okay, you know, this is what critical logic, you know, critical thinking and logic means. And that really stuck with me. And so I've always tried to say, okay, what's the logic, but not be limited to logic, but at least have a basis or foundation in logical thinking, which these days I think is really helpful.
It could be. I think we get a little slow down and do a little bit more of that these days.
You think? Yeah. So I think emotions are really important, and exploring those emotions are absolutely critical. But if you can't look at your emotions logically, you can get consumed by them. You can be overwhelmed by them. And the third teacher was in high school, and his name was Mr. Burdock. And oh gosh, this still has such a profound, I almost start crying every time I think about this. I didn't think about it consciously until you asked me about it. I mean, I thought about it early in my life, but not until recently did I really start thinking about it. And Mr. Burdock, one day in class, he taught speed reading. And in class, he like looks at me and he goes, everybody thinks little Susie is going to be so successful because she's on the student council and she's prom queen. She's a cheerleader, you know, and oh, wow, isn't she just so successful? But I can almost guarantee you she's going to end up like the rest of you. She's going to live her life in quiet desperation. What? I was like, what? And I was so humiliated and I was apoplexic. I couldn't even respond. And it was like a couple of days later, I went up to him and I said, why did you do that? I was so hurtful. And I just, you know, I was just really taken aback by it. And he said, why do you think I did it? And it turns out he told me he did it to challenge me because he didn't want me to be one of, this is where I get emotional. He didn't want me to be one of those people living her life in quiet desperation. And so he wanted to raise awareness about that as a possibility. And I've seen studies now that show that less than 15% of us are self-reflective. And I think that those three teachers I just talked about, and especially Mr. Burdock, that what they did was they made me reflective. And I'm forever grateful for that.
Wow. Those are powerful stories. How does this lesson of self-reflection show up in your life, mm-hmm. and your teachings and the people you work with?
My life credo is I teach what I most need to learn. And isn't it interesting that three of the people I just mentioned to you were teachers? And so I think I must have this extraordinary respect for teaching. And I taught my brothers and sisters how to read before they ever got to school. So I've always been a teacher. But I went into business and I own my own advertising agency, and I've done a lot in my years business-wise. But then I came back to teaching. I came back to wanting to go into corporate America and use the organization as a mechanism for helping people to live lives that weren't in quiet desperation. I remember literally saying, if I want to have an impact on the world, how do I do it? And I thought, I need to get organizations to fund people's learning. And so my first product, if you will, the first big class or course that I created was self-leadership for the Ken Blanchard companies. And today it's their second largest selling product. It's been taught tens of thousands of times to hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And it's all about proactive behavior. It's all about how do you accept responsibility and take initiative? You know, what's the mindset and the skill set to really be the one that creates your own reality? And the workplace is the best place to start, because that's where we spend 75% of the time we spend awake is connected to our work. It's getting up and getting ready for work. It's getting to work. It's working. It's getting home and decompressing from work. And these days, it almost feels like it's 24/7 because people are working at home. So it's really the place where we can practice being proactive and create our own reality.
And as your books and your products and all reflect this learning, this self-reflection kind of as a core to the work that you do. So what would you like for our guests to leave with today from these stories of the three teachers in your life who modeled teaching and other things? I mean, you know, sometimes you realize those things as we talk about them more, but as they look at their life and as they look at their leadership, what's some thoughts around taking this concept to heart?
You know, I think, and this is going to sound like a political statement, Michael, and I don't want it to be because I think it's beyond politics. It's emblematic of what the world is going through right now, that we're living in a golden age of conspiracy theories. And the research I've seen around conspiracy theories is that they are primarily embraced by what's called low effort thinkers. And so I do believe that this capacity to be a critical thinker, to embrace what you learn, to look at a variety of sources for where you get your information. So to like, for example, I go on 15 to 20 different websites every single day, some of them multiple times, across a wide variety of political spectrums. And what I really try to do is say, where do my beliefs come from? And what's the information? And who are the teachers that are informing my beliefs that turn into my values that then guide my behavior? And I guess that's what I'm asking people, is just to think about the teachers in your life. Who are your references? Who are your resources? And where do your beliefs come from? Because that makes a big difference in the values and your behavior.
Well, Susan, thanks so much for sharing your stories of the three teachers who made you think critically and self-reflectively. And you've given us something to take with us today as we go out and try to be small-time leaders in our worlds. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I'd like to leave you with a thought. I believe that we live in a small world that often feels out of control. But I also believe there is a big God who is in control and who speaks to us in a still, small voice. And if we just listen, we may be granted the occasion to make a positive difference in someone's life. So I challenge you to be a small-time leader today and help someone see themselves in a brand new way. Thanks again for listening to this podcast. For more information about my firm, blog, products, today's special guest, please go to michaelallentate.com or smalltimeleaders.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the Small Time Leader podcast so you never miss an episode. And join our Facebook group for more exclusive content. I'll see you on the next episode of Small Time Leaders.